The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number 9, so much more than a producer in the Izzy. What's happening?
Not much, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. Hashem doesn't let me get 5-0s in millions, though, with the Saints loss there last night. We'll get to that momentarily. First of all, we are packed. Kelly has packed the show with guests. Wow. Ooh, this is an overbooking. No, we're good. Drew Dinsick joining us, as always, on Tuesday. Whale Capper, talk NFL with us, both Week 5 and Week 6 moving ahead. Jake Hahn, there you go, baby. Jake Hahn to talk NHL with us. The NHL season officially began with a couple games last week, as a special numbers game investigation revealed, but it begins in earnest moving forward.
That's right.
That's right. Sort of like what baseball did with those games in, remember, it would do a couple games in Asia back in the day, and then I think actually this year there was a couple that began the season as well, and then the actual season begins several days later for everybody else. Will Hill with all his bets. Tim Murray, we got to talk about an unbelievable weekend in college football. Obviously, Alabama goes down to Vandy being the headline, but five of the nation's top 11 teams go down. Not quite the same as it used to be under the old format, but still an unbelievable weekend with implications. And then Paul Spohr talking baseball. We have a doubleheader in baseball today. Two game threes in the National League. We'll get his thoughts. Obviously, a quadruple header tomorrow, where all four series, Kelly, are knotted up at one apiece. All four best of fives.
Let's go. I'm excited.
That has never happened before.
Really?
Never happened before that all four division round series are one apiece.
Is it bad that I'm far more interested in the National League ones?
No, it's not bad.
You think that's a common take?
You're entitled to your opinion. No, you just mean it from a fan interest standpoint?
Yeah.
I think that's common.
Okay.
Yeah, but more people are into Philly and the Mets and the Dodgers and the Padres. By the way, this Padres game tonight in San Diego, given the two teams' rivalry to begin with.
I can't wait.
But then what happened in game two, Jurickson Profar going nuts on some random fan who threw a ball at him, Manny Machado throwing a ball into the Dodgers' dugout. Do you hear about that? Mm-hmm. Dave Roberts found that disrespectful. Jeff Parlay, who was headed to game three in Queens tonight, between the Mets and the Phillies, actually this afternoon, well, evening, East Coast time, he's headed to that. He's also, I guess he had a couple Padres tickets at one point, so the Padres, he's on the Padres mailing list. So the owner management had to send out an email to all the people in attendance.
Oh, the please behave email?
That we are great fans, we will root for our team, we will root against the other team, but there is a line and you can't cross that line tonight. So it honestly, if there was ever, I hate to say that this is what would bring in fans to the baseball tent, because there's a bunch of us who still love baseball and are purist about baseball, but this, I mean, this is about as brawly as it gets for a baseball game.
Yeah, it's a little scary. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited to watch it. But when you get the email from the team, right? It's always like
the preemptive email.
Yeah, you'll see like colleges do that sometimes when it's a big college football rivalry and some stuff's going on. But man, that's when you're getting the email from the owner of we need show how classy and good of fans we are tonight. Yeah. No, they're not. They're not.
As long as no one gets hurt, Kelly, I'm all for it.
That's right.
Be at each other's throats in this game. Game three tonight, King versus Bueller, with the Padres now north of a -150 favorite. By the way, our two preflop series bets in this round, the Padres +115, the Royals +180, both in good shape now. All these series de facto best of threes, if you will, with the Royals and Padres, in our circumstances, having home field in quotes at this point, you know, can close it out theoretically on their home field. And by the way, I was asked by Parlay yesterday, which of the best of fours do I think is the best of fives, these division series, do I think is the most likely to conclude in four games, and which is the least likely? I actually think the Padres-Dodgers is the most likely to conclude in four games. I just think the Padres are a better baseball team. They got to win with that pitching advantage today. And I think the least likely is the Phillies and the Mets. Like, that one, to me, seems like it's more headed to five than the others. And I think the Guardians, Tigers, and Yankees-Royals fall somewhere in the middle. The Royals getting back off the schneid yesterday against the Yankees with a 4-2 win, where they got all four of their runs in one frame. And Reagans wasn't even at his best, and the Royals got it done yesterday. And the Tigers, in a great baseball game early yesterday, Three-run jack by Kerry Carpenter off of Emmanuel Clase in the ninth. 3-0. That was all it was. That was all the scoring yesterday in that Tigers-Guardians game. So these series are awesome. It's the best thing going on in sports right now.
What are some of these stories? Like I just heard Grace bring it up on the VSiN morning line. Kerry Carpenter?
Kerry Carpenter.
The home run from him, and he was working at a grocery store like 2 years ago or something. And then the Yankees are trying some guy out at first base that's never played the position.
Well,
he's straight out of Moneyball.
He's never played first base before. That's right, Baird. He never played before.
What a time to make these decisions.
Yeah. Carpenter, the amazing thing about Carpenter is he's, you know, terrible against lefties. So when righties start, he does not start. But against, like, if you do his splits, his against left and against right splits, he's so much better as, you know, against righties. And then specifically, I don't know what there is to this, but maybe he doesn't like his home par, but against right-handers away, he hits 360.
That's badass.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
In this day and age, it's amazing. And so yesterday, Clase, for whatever reason, decided to throw three straight sliders, and he just jacked the third one out. And so the Tigers, again, all they have to do in this series, I'm being somewhat sarcastic here, just like they did in the wild card series, they got to have one non-Scooble win. So they did what they had to do yesterday and win a Scooble start. So Carpenter came to the rescue. So these are amazing.
I want to be that baseball player, the guy who specializes hitting either lefties or righties, whichever, and then you're, for whatever reason, awesome away.
I would like
just to punish fans of opposing fan bases.
I'd like for you to be a loogie. If I had my choice of which Kelly Bidlin specialized player, just a left-handed batter.
Yeah, yeah.
That goes, a left-handed pitcher, pardon me, that goes in there and gets one. Back in the day when you were able to only pitch to one batter.
And then get out of it.
They would throw you in. You'd be like this portly left-handed pitcher, and you would just.
I'd have sweet walking music or running music. Yeah, I wouldn't run. I'd take my time.
Yeah.
Soak that moment in.
Sorry about calling you portly earlier. Apologize.
It's factual.
Yeah. football last night. I don't have much to say about this other than somehow the Saints were still in this to cover late.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was kind of a miracle that they were even in that position late, to be honest with you. The reason that they were in that position largely was because when Kansas City was up 16-7, after Butker hit the right goalpost on a 51-yard field goal try, the next time that a PI was not flagged deep on Paulson Adebo against Worthy, the next time that Kansas City had the ball, Mahomes, again, deep matriculation to the red zone, and then Mahomes had a pass picked off a deflection by Colin Saunders, who returned it 36 yards out of the end zone. So at that point, and then the Saints got it down. Carr to Foster Morona, make it 16-13. This is early fourth quarter. So Saints backers against the number somehow still had a shot in this game in the fourth quarter. But then that was quickly erased because took Chiefs five plays to go 68 yards. And that was the end of that, as Juju had a big, big game. Juju for 50, the big chunk of that drive. And it ends up being a 26-13 win for the Chiefs, where the Saints lost Derek Carr late in this game. Jake Haener had to finish things out for the New Orleans Saints. 26-13 Chiefs in a game that was not nearly this close, quite frankly. No. A 460-220 total yards advantage. The Saints were doubled up in first down, 28-14, and they were 4 seconds shy of being doubled up in time of possession. It was really dominant. And the Kansas City Chiefs now go to 5-0. So only the Chiefs and the Vikings are undefeated. The battle for last undefeated still remains between the Chiefs and the Vikings. Congratulations if you have one of those tickets still in play. And then the questions, you know, they even mentioned this on the broadcast last night, or maybe they didn't mention this broadcast, maybe this was a text. I can't even determine where I'm getting all this.
Yeah, no, right.
But Patrick Mahomes is now your short shot for MVP. We don't care about any of that. We just care about the betting market. Patrick Mahomes, your short shot. And if we go to Cleve TA's, our buddy Cleve's MVP guidelines, Patrick Mahomes kind of fits the bill, right? Like, it's the old LeBron thing, right? You could give it to him every year if you wanted to, but he's the short shot now because everybody else who was up there, the Josh Allens and Lamar Jacksons of the world, have kind of, I don't want to say they've taken a step back, but they haven't been at their best, let's say.
Yeah.
And so right now, Patrick Mahomes is plus 330 over at DraftKings. Lamar's Lamar and Josh Allen both at 6-1, pardon me. And the only other person in single digits is CJ Stroud at plus 750. I do want to point out that Jaden Daniels is next at 10-1, which is just awesome. I won't endorse it, but it's awesome. I got a question on Twitter this morning. I want to give proper credit to who it was. I want to say was it Jesse Welch or was it Teasers and Parlays? It was Jesse Welch. Jesse Welch, who asked, is this the year that Andy Reid could perhaps get the Lifetime Achievement Award Coach of the Year honor? The issue with it, while Mahomes still qualifies under Cleve's very tried and true MVP criteria, Andy Reid just doesn't fit the bill for Coach of the Year. Per the Cleve stuff. And if anyone's like, oh, what does Cleve know? Cleve has actually like really done these parameters very well. Here's the question from Jesse Welch. He said, Reid Coach of the Year, 20-1. I said it 2 weeks ago when he was 35-1, but even more so now, isn't this the kind of season where he gets the Lifetime Achievement Award with a very well-rounded team? Here's the problem, though. Yes, 15 straight winners of this award have been on a team with at least 9 wins. Okay, that works. The average preseason win total of the last 15 winners is around 7.5 wins, though. No winner in the last 15 years came into the season with a win total of greater than 9.5. So that's an issue. The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 games from the prior year. That's an issue. Nearly half of the last 15 winners were first-year head coaches. That's an issue. And he goes ahead, by the way, in this preseason preview, he says, you can go ahead and eliminate the coaches on the best teams who don't fit these criteria, like a Kyle Shanahan, like a John Harbaugh, like Dan Campbell and Andy Reid. So the Seahawks would have to crater, the Vikings would have to crater, like everything would have to happen for this perfect storm of Andy Reid. Drew Dinsick next on the NFL.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Since our hockey guide is out and we're talking hockey with Jake Hahn coming up, I only think it's fair that we talk NBA. Basketball season ready to tip off on October 22nd, Kelly.
Let's go.
Special numbers game investigation tells us that. And the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as little as $9.99 for your first month. And reserve your copy of our upcoming NBA betting guide featuring previews and power ratings on all 30 teams, best bets and futures from the VSiN experts, player prop and live betting strategies, plus senior NBA analyst JVT's favorite title bets. JVT will be on with us tomorrow. Give yourself an edge this season. Reserve your copy of the VSiN NBA betting guide. Get a full month of VSiN Pro for just $9.99 at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. It's not often that we have breaking news while we're on air. The news cycle typically begins at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, but today is an exception because per Adam Schefter over at ESPN, the Jets have fired head coach, or former head coach now, Robert Saleh. And to the surprise of not many, I guess, that it was not a question of if, but when, I think most people thought, if this continued, if this mediocrity, and I'm being kind, continued with the New York Jets, or best we got, August 15th was the latest we were able to ascertain what Saleh was for first coach fired. On August 15th, it was 9-1. I don't know who was offering that since, but obviously it would have shortened since. But 9-1 was what he was available on, in the offseason in that market. Drew Dinsick joins us now, whale_capper on Twitter. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, he is the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. He joins us now from the LBC. Drew, what's your reaction to that?
Well, you know why it's early. It's because the Jets are still on London time. And so, you know, they're taking care of business a little earlier in the day than they would normally. This is probably a move that was more precipitated by the loss to the Broncos, I suppose, because otherwise, you know, that the other two, the other two Jets losses in their 2-3 start to the season, one of them was relatively explainable with the opener against, an informed Niners team. And then, they were live in that game in London with a pretty, impressive effort to stay in that game and to give themselves an opportunity for a comeback. So I definitely didn't get the sense that there was quit in the air in the locker room. But this is the Aaron Rodgers show. You signed, this is what you signed up for when you bring him in the first place. A lot of the roster moves and the roster constructions have his fingerprints all over them. To the degree that the offensive coordinator was, in my opinion, part of the problem, and that's an Aaron Rodgers guy, and Saleh's not. That also is an issue for kind of longevity as a head coach. And there was a moment offshore, at least, where, you know, first coach fired and coach of the year odds were up, first market to pop. Saleh was the favorite in both. And it was hilarious
because
it was like, this is a make or break season for the Jets. Either they make it and he's your coach of the year contender, or they don't and he's gone. And he ended up drifting pretty aggressively in that market, as it seemed very likely that Doug Peterson was going to lose his job on either end of going to London. But no, it turns out the Jets make the move first. I'm hanging on by a thread here to find out who the interim coach is. If it's Hackett, I don't know.
What do you say at that point?
It's Hackett, I don't know what you say, but pretty clearly, like, the writing was on the wall to a degree, in that, you know, Rodgers and Saleh were talking past each other with the media clips that they were giving the last 2 weeks in terms of his cadence and what that meant, and offensive preparation and the route trees and all the players talking past Saleh in the media was a bad sign.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's what was in my head as you were talking, which is that couldn't have helped, right? The fact that, Saleh comes out and says, we need to change the cadences, which is, we need to change the cadence pattern, which Aaron Rodgers has been using from the dawn of time. And Aaron Rodgers immediately said, maybe we should hold people accountable instead. Or we could, the exact quote was, or we could hold people accountable. And in just that Aaron Rodgers snarky kind of way. And that couldn't have helped. Yeah. That couldn't have helped. You're absolutely right. No.
It will be the DC who's taking over interim head coaching responsibilities. That, according to Peter Schrager, Jeff Ulbrich there.
Okay. Interesting. There was, if you listen loud enough to people in the building, I think there was some discontent about the degree of preparation Saleh was putting in to his job over the course of this time window. I mean, ultimately, the record that his career record there, 20-36, it's a direct reflection of a lot of Zach Wilson's starts. And yes, if you want to hold him as the head coach ultimately responsible for the failure of the development of Zach Wilson, that's fine. I think in general, there were a lot of factors that really kind of caused this iteration of the Jets to fail. And it's crazy that we're even kind of at the point where the season feels like it's over for them, or at least over to the point of firing their coach. Nobody in the NFL right now has distinguished themselves. Like, there's like the, even the 5-0 Vikings and 5-0 Chiefs, like, you can look at those teams with under a microscope and be like, there are flaws here. Like, the Chiefs are getting it done with guys who are out of the league.
It's amazing.
At the skill position players, skill positions. And like that may be sustainable, maybe. But there's a lot of problems with a lot of the good teams in the NFL. And I think I was talking to Andy about this last night as we were kind of reflecting on our power numbers. Like, usually by the time we get to week 6, I've got a few teams where I'm like willing to say, oh yeah, this team is like 6.5, maybe 7 points better than an average team. Right now, my best teams in the NFL are like 4.2, 4.3. Like, there are no like true standout screamers that these teams are good. I think the idea that Circus Survivor's practically over is like good evidence of that, beyond just the fact that, you know, power ratings would suggest that the top is just not that impressive this year.
Well, let me sort of riff on that, because we did get a tweet this morning about an hour ago from MTW24 Golfer, who said, Drew has San Francisco, as do I, by the way, headed into this past week, as did I. Drew has San Francisco as number one ranked team. Can you guys go through that process? They're 2-3 with wins versus two bottom six teams.
Yeah. I mean, the answer is I still believe in the scheme that they're running, and I still believe that they have the skill position players to execute that scheme. I believe in Brock Purdy as a top five quarterback, at least from the standpoint of, consistent offensive efficiency. And it's a team that you know, with if you have a quarterback, an offensive scheme that is good, and skill position players who are good right now in the NFL, that puts you at the front of the line. Like, that's kind of all there is to say.
Yeah.
I have questions about their pass protection, but ultimately I excuse those because Shanahan's scheme is pretty pass rush agnostic in general. And I have questions about their defense, particularly the depth of the D line, I think is a huge question mark and problem. But I also look at their, you know, kind of team rating as only likely to go up on defense as they get good players back here over the next few weeks. Drake Greenlaw may be the most important of those and really fortifying the front seven. I mean, to me, it's less of a reflection of the results than it is just, well, how do you rate this team going forward? The Niners results are also a fair bit misleading. Like, they had, if you sum up the win probability as an integral across the entire game against the Rams, that was like a 95% win game. If you sum up the win probability against the Cardinals, that was like an 85-90% win probability game for that team. They just absolutely bottled the endings in both of those cases. And week two at the Vikings on a short week, getting a little bit surprised by the Vikings scheme, I can excuse that as well. It would be, this week is obviously exceptionally important. I laid it with the San Francisco on the open here. I think that it's the Seahawks defensive injuries. Basically, the Seahawks defense is a cluster injury. And I think that is a bad sign for, a team like going up against the Niners in a desperate spot here. This next few weeks really will distinguish the Niners, I think, as the best team in the NFL. It's important to note that almost isn't even that impressive to say that this team is the best team in the NFL for me right now, because the margins between the teams at the top are very, very narrow. My distance between San Francisco, Kansas City, Baltimore are, very fine margins. And then teams like Buffalo and Houston and Minnesota on the next tier are a tiny step behind. So you have like a cluster of seven at the top right now that on any given day, anyone can win. Anyone can lose.
Well, just two reactions to that. One, when I did guessing lines yesterday, the very first game out of the shoot, right, is the Thursday night game. I, too, loved San Francisco laying the points on the road. And to your point about the power rankings, and I'm not being prisoner of the moment, I know this to be a fact, through 5 weeks of an NFL season, four for some teams, right, I have never had three teams with either two or three losses already in my top five, talking about San Francisco, Baltimore, and Green Bay. And that just shows you what the league is. The fact that those teams, even with all those, warts thus far in terms of results, are still cream of the crop when it comes to this league. Pete Rozelle's dream of parity, never more apparent than it is now. Drew's thoughts on week six moving forward, his bets next, right here on A Numbers Game.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa, it's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside. Kelly is somewhere. I think he's behind the glass. Maybe he went out to the bathroom. I don't know. But we had to put him in a soundproof room during the Tim Murray segment, because we do have college football guessing lines coming up next segment. So there's that. Before we get to Paul Sporn Talk Baseball, there's one correction, and this is what happens when I read tweets live. You may have heard me react like, oh, my God, if that's the price, that's a bet. That's an auto bet. That was when I read a tweet about the popular vote that apparently someone was saying that Kamala was plus 130 in some location. That turns out to be not true at all. As you can imagine, that was my reaction was, oh, my God, that's too good to be true. It turns out it was too good to be true. Kamala is a huge favorite in the popular vote category. Minus 400, minus 500. Jason Stark, Palm Readers, everybody, thank you for letting me know about that. Also via text. People are like, what? Plus 130? That can't be. Now remember, this is not the Electoral College we're talking about. We're talking about the popular vote, which the Democrats are, apolitically speaking, supposed to win no matter what. No matter what one says here, with still, a little less than 4 weeks away from the election of 2024. And we will have more political coverage. We've done some segments with Jason Weingarten, but we will do more betting segments between now and then, apolitically speaking. Let's talk some baseball. Paul Sporer joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, writes for Fangraphs. Sleeper in the Bus podcast is his podcast as well. And Paul, you and I were just talking off air. I know I get off at 9 a.m. Pacific. I have exactly 5 hours before the first game today. That's how my entire day is parsed. That's how excited I am about baseball. Get everything done, sit down, and watch a doubleheader.
That's absolutely the way it is during October baseball. You've got whatever that window is between your wake-up time and the first game to get everything done. Because I know for me, even when the Tigers aren't in it, I can't focus on anything work-wise once the games are going. So I am 100% with you. And then you add in the extra factor that my favorite team is in it, and I'm just useless once they're on in terms of any work.
I'm going to ask you the same question that Jeff Parlay, my former Grover Cleveland producers, asked me yesterday. He goes, okay, they're all 1-1, right? We've never had this before. All four division series tied at 1-1. So they're de facto best of threes now. And he asked me, which do I believe is the most likely to finish in four and which is the least likely to finish in four? In other words, they won't go back to the higher seeds home ballpark. My answer was that I thought the most likely to finish in four for me was actually the Padres and Dodgers.
Like,
you too. That's your answer.
Yeah.
What is your thinking on that?
I mean, I really, really like this Padres team. Full disclosure, they're my World Series pick. So my confidence is there. That's where the bias lays. But it does. I don't come by it, you know, dishonestly in any way. I just think this team is loaded and ready to go. And I still think we look at the Dodgers, you know, they have expectation. They're a good team, but they're not this behemoth. They've got the big names. They got the big money, but they are a little bit top heavy. They're not as deep as some of these recent teams. And I just love what this San Diego bullpen can do. I think they can overcome any potential Musgrove issues. Actually, what's the latest on him? Is he out? He's not on this roster. So even if he's out the rest of the way, I think they can overcome that with this bullpen. Cease, King, Darvish is a strong 1-2-3 there. I know Cease got knocked around a bit, but Darvish came right back. The lineup goes hard. They run a little light at the bottom of third there, but Higashioka can go yard on you. Donnie Barrels, as Donovan Solano is called, are going to give you knocks left and right. And Cronenworth in the seventh slot's a capable player, multi-time All-Star, or at least a one-time All-Star. So they're great. And I just think that I think they're better than the Dodgers. I know they were five games worse than the regular season, but in a five-game set, I think they have a chance to close it out.
Musgrove, by the way, undergoing Tommy John. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had missed that he's getting the full TJ. That's a bummer. Yeah. I mean, it's somewhat inevitable, I guess, at times once these guys start to pile up a few different things. But yeah, that really stinks for him. I like Musgrove quite a bit.
The least likely to end in four, I said, was the Mets and the Phillies. Do you agree with that?
Gil, I mean, I don't mean to just be copying you, but that's exactly where I'm at here.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. I just think that these two, again, you can look, you see the 6-game difference in season. I respect that. But now that we're here in a 5-gamer and actually a 3-gamer, as it were, right, with all these being 1-1, it's a 3-gamer with the underdog having home field. That said, I think the way we've seen these games go back and forth, that game Sunday was unbelievable. I just feel like that's the whole series, right? It feels like it has to go five Phillies Mets and probably contain a ninth inning or extra innings drama to go with it, just the way it's been tracking. So, yeah, I'm lockstep with you on that.
What about today's game, the Phillies and the Mets? This is as close to a coin flip as it gets. The Phillies are the slightest of favorites on the road in Queens. It's Nola against Manaea.
I just really love I hesitate to say emergence as if he's never been good, but I guess maybe the reemergence then of Sean Manaea as an absolute stud. And in fact, I think you could even say emergence because this is a new height for him. This is a level that we've not really seen. He put up some good numbers on occasion in Oakland, you know, had some good seasons and up and down. I think I've even talked with you about how much he hated San Francisco last year because of the way they utilized him in the role. He didn't like the kind of fluid role of you're going to be the follower today for four innings. You're going to be a traditional starter. You might be in relief for two. He hated that. And you know what? That's fine. I understand the notion of like being ready when your number's called or whatever, but not every guy adapts properly. So now in a more traditional starting role, we saw Manaea just absolutely take off this summer. And I think he's going to give Philly all they can handle. The one thing there is that they are pretty good against lefties. So that's what makes it such a coin toss. But I am leaning toward the Mets today to get a 2-1 victory.
Leaning towards the Mets. And obviously we talked about the Padres and Dodgers, but King against Bueller today. King is now north of -150. Is that too high?
It's probably a little bit too high there. Again, I really do like this team. I hate to just run the opposite way against Padres team that I am very bullish on. But again, it's all about the context of the number and everything. And that seems to run maybe a little bit too high. I understand the concerns around Buehler and everything that he's done this year, or as it were, hasn't done, right? Because that's really the problem, is that he hasn't been, quote unquote, Walker Buehler. So I see where the number gets there, but I'm probably, despite being very pro San Diego, it's probably a layoff for me. I'm not going to run the other way to the Dodgers necessarily, because I do like the Padres so much, but I think it's just a little too hot for me to go with King at minus 155.
All right, what about your Tigers tomorrow? We go back to Detroit after Kerry Carpenter's heroics against Emmanuel Clase yesterday in the ninth.
Unbelievable.
With a three-run shot, three straight sliders. That third one was one too many to the well, and Carpenter parked it. Yeah, that was unbelievable. And now your Tigers, Paul, your Tigers, two wins away from an appearance in the American League Championship Series. And remember, if they can just win one of these two, they got Scooble in game five. What do you think tomorrow?
I really like their chances tomorrow. Now, of course, I should take out of that. I'll say I like their chances because we don't really know the pitching plan just yet. I'm seeing undecided right now. I'm sure it'll be an opener followed by who knows, right? We don't know if it'll be Reese Olson for four innings or if they do the full bullpen or whatever. But they're facing a good pitcher. I like Alex Cobb. I'm actually a longtime Alex Cobb fan, dating back to his days in Tampa Bay. But he's a 36-year-old with tons of injuries coming off of another injury right now. So, like, what are they really getting out of him? I feel like they might have to be in that bullpen early, too. So it could be kind of a bullpen game all around. And while their bullpen is awesome, I'm not saying that that greatly favors the Tigers, I think the Tigers are more accustomed to doing it, so that if they have to run essentially six, seven guys tomorrow, they're not bothered by that. I don't know how much the Guardians feel comfortable with that if Cobb can only go two or three innings, either due to ineffectiveness, health, or just not being ramped up enough. So I do lean toward my boys tomorrow. It's a tight one, but I'm really excited for them to hopefully take a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, tomorrow, by the way, is the final quadruple header, which begins at 3 p.m. Eastern. And then every game is staggered 2 hours. So it's 3, 5, 7, and 9.
Unavailable after that. Two Central, don't bother me. You can text me, Gil, but nobody else.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will. Assuming things go well for your Tigers, I certainly will. Cleveland-Detroit is the first of the quadruple header tomorrow. The third game tomorrow, chronologically, is also game three of the Yankees-Royals series. That's Schmidt against Lugo. What is your sense of that game? What is your sense of this series? How do you feel about this?
Really, really intriguing series here. You got kind of that upstart team with the Royals against the established Titan that hasn't really done a whole lot lately, right? They're living off of reputation, the Yankees, in terms of actually putting championships up, but they're still understandably the favorites. I don't know how much the bulletin board material stuff works. I feel like we always retroactively apply that. I do think it was kind of stupid of Jazz to say they got lucky. I don't really like diminishing your opponent. I don't care if you truly believe that in your heart of hearts or if it truly was lucky. Let's say it was a blown call or some doinky, 20-mile-an-hour hit that just sailed over the third baseman. I don't care how lucky it was. Saying it, just there's no value to that. Like, what do you get out of that other than to potentially make yourself look bad? Again, I don't know how much that's going to play and it doesn't make the Royals better, but I just don't love it. I actually had a really good feeling with the Yankees. Clark Schmidt, big fan of his. I think he's a wonderful young pitcher, had a sneaky great season this year. Lugo's been awesome, but I think Clark Schmidt's going to handle it. I think he's going to go into KC, give them a 2-1 lead, and overcome Jazz Chisholm's verbal blunder. It's not the end of the world, but I just don't think you should go around saying that stuff. I don't want to clutch my pearls over it. It's just, what do you gain from it? Like, what do you can only look dumb because you either said it and whatever, or they beat you and they say, how's that for luck, right? And they're just going to rub it in his face either way. So it's just zip it on that one, Jazz.
So of all the game threes, which is the one you feel strongest about?
Probably the Yankees. I like them to go in there. Wow. Again, I like this Royals team, but I'm a big Clark Schmidt guy. This is a lot of Clark Schmidt love here. Okay. I do worry about the offense being basically two guys, right? We're seeing that again here, but I think Clark can get it done. Hold him for five.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Gil.
Paul Take Sporer, care. Everybody. Guessing lines with Kelly next.